everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Whew. I've had a very foodie kind of day today, and I'll be talking a little bit more about it later, but I've been spending all of my morning into early afternoon at the Food Revolution Summit, which started last Saturday and goes until next Sunday. It's a 9-day event, and I've been tuning in, listening to the broadcast for 3 hours a day, and fielding questions by the listeners all during the broadcast. And there have been, like, I don't know, 7,000-8,000 posts so far, and weeding them out and deciding how to respond appropriately has been a massive project. But I continue, and I am more inspired than ever. One of the things about events like the Food Revolution Summit, which is online, or local events that happen in your community, like the Veggie Pride Parade, which I've talked about numerous times on this program, you get to meet like-minded people, people who are doing wonderful things, small scale, larger scale, medium scale, no matter how big or small. Everything that we do to make this world a better place is important. And I meet so many wonderful people at these events, and it really helps recharge to know that you're not alone and that a lot of good things are happening. We don't hear enough about the good things that are happening in mainstream media, and that's what I try and do here every week. So, speaking of the Vegetarian Pride Parade, this year I heard a speaker. I was one of the speakers, but I heard another speaker who I'd never heard before and found out about an organization I had never heard before. And now we're going to hear from her and about the organization. Mary Fennelly is president and chairperson of Fish Feel. Mary is a longtime animal rights activist with a BS in animal science. She has worked for various animal protection organizations with a primary focus on farmed animals. Mary was the producer of Farmed Animal Watch, a weekly online news digest. She has also assisted with research for several books and co-wrote a chapter of In Defense of Animals, The Second Wave. Fish Feel is the sole organization devoted exclusively to promoting the recognition of fishes as sentient beings deserving of respect and protection. Mary Fennelly, welcome to It's All About Food.
Well, hi, Karen, and thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. As I mentioned earlier, I heard you speak, and I have to admit, you know, going on to also give a talk myself, I was focusing on what I wanted to say, and I didn't get everything that you said. So I hope you can review some of what you spoke about during the Pride Parade and a lot more. So Fish Feel, tell us about Fish Feel.
Yes, well, it's a relatively new organization, and we work to educate the public that science has shown that fish are sentient. They feel fear and pain, and they're killed in far greater numbers than any other category of animals used for food. And the way they go about killing them is so indiscriminate. They're also catching dolphins and whales, turtles, birds, seals, you name it, whoever's out there. They're dredging the bottom of the ocean floor and destroying the habitat, the coral reef and other habitat down there. We're basically desertifying the oceans, and all for something that's not even good for us. It's got mercury, dioxins, parasites, pathogens, cholesterol, saturated fat. Fish is certainly not a healthful food to eat. For people who like seafood, there are so many wonderful vegan versions available now that are better for us, better for the other animals, and better for the environment. It really just makes sense.
Well, that's a mouthful. Now, in your bio, I can't help but mention I love puns. And you describe Fish Feel as the sole organization.
That was actually unintentional, but good of you to pick up on that.
But that's an important point, because I have never heard of a another organization focusing on this issue, the fact that fish feel. I've read more and more science behind this concept recently. And humans in general, we don't have a very good reputation for being open-minded, and we tend to be racist and speciesist, not really knowing how to relate to beings that are different than us. And so it starts with gender and how people express their gender. It also shows itself with race, and when people look different than we are, when they have a different culture than we are, we tend to want to exploit what's different. And so now we're, I think, developing a little bit more, maybe, an appreciation for our fellow mammals, maybe. There's more conversation about it, but fish, we don't look like them. This is the tip of the iceberg.
It's true. Everything you say is very true. I have been involved.
The tip of the melting iceberg, I have to add.
Hopefully so, yes. We're trying to help melt it. I'd been involved in farmed animal protection I'd been involved in animal rights for the past 30 years, really focusing primarily on farmed animal protection. Mm-hmm. And, I've always wanted to get to the roots of what's harming animals and how to help the most of them. And really, the animals that are, again, the greatest category by far of animals being killed for food are fish. On our website, we have a chart that compares them. And there are some 50 billion fish killed for use as food in the U.S. every year. So the number is just, it really just dwarfs the other numbers of animals, horrific as they are and immense as they are. The number of fish killed is just astronomical. And largely they're just being ignored by the public, their welfare, by the public, and even by the animal protection and the animal rights community. And we're just being very specious, really, when it comes to fishes. And fishes are just such a huge category of animals, and animals most people don't even consider to be fishes. For example, eels and rays and seahorses, it's just a huge category of animals. And so we just decided that somebody should be advocating on behalf of fishes, so we began Fish Feel.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Well, I'm so glad to be able to do it.
Now, can you tell me what you studied in animal science?
Well, really, it would be more precisely named titled animal exploitation. It's all about how to go about using animals as food, essentially. How to go about it efficiently, and really very little was touched on as far as welfare. There was maybe one course I took in the whole program that was addressing that, and that was back in the early 90s, so that was, just when they were really starting to address farmed animal issues. Even though this is being touched on at the university, I went to the University of Maryland, it's a land-grant university, the people who are teaching it are very biased, then that's, of course, going to influence the students as well. So, even though it was being addressed there, the way it was being addressed was in very couched terms.
And were you an animal rights activist at the time?
I was. I had been involved in animal rights before that, and I went there specifically to study animal science so I could use it to help animals, hopefully, which I like to believe I'm doing. It was very, very troubling to see it was being taught there. Not surprising, but disturbing nonetheless.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, in our education system, what's being taught is not necessarily the best for humanity and the best for the planet. When people go to learn about agriculture, they often learn about animal agriculture and how to make it more efficient, or how to grow plants for animals and make that more efficient. And there's lots of subsidies and funding that go to universities to promote this type of education. I hope environmental science is changing. I remember when a friend of mine went into an environmental science program back in the late 70s. This was a long time ago. he was very disappointed because he cared about the environment. And he went into this reputable program, and all they were talking about really was cutting down trees for paper and using the environment, exploiting the environment rather than protecting it.
Oh, yes. And even within animal science and the animal agriculture component, they were actually getting away from, farm-oriented production and investing more into laboratory genetically engineering animals. You know, that was the way you could see that was the way it was going at that program. So that even more disturbing, really.
Now, before we get into the big stuff, I just wanted to point out what we can do as individuals, not just in terms of eating, but I have friends over time who have told me they like to fish for sport. There are some romantic images that we have of father and son or grandfather and son going out and fishing. There's so many pictures I've seen. You see their backs. And it's a beautiful picture, and they've got their rods in the water, this bonding event. And then many of my friends have told me, yeah, I fish and I throw them back. Can you talk about fishing and throwing the wounded fish back into the water?
Yes. Well, it is such an Orwellian concept when you think of it, how fishing is promoted as being this peaceful way to enjoy nature and bond with your children. In fact, just yesterday, there was a post put up on a website HABRI is the name of the organization. I can't remember. Human-Animal Bonding Research Institute, I think is what it stood for. And it was for National Pet Week and children bonding with animals. It showed a little boy on a dock, and he has a fish on the end of his line, and there's a cat on the dock with him, and the cat's kind of playing with this fish. And, you know, it's just such an absurd idea. That's how you bond, how children should bond with animals, by torturing and killing an animal. So, of course, we, you know, posted comments in response to that. But, you know, people just, as you were alluding to earlier, they don't think of fish even as animals, so many people, which is so absurd, or as feeling animals or thinking animals. And this is also contrary to what we know about fish, what science has shown about fish, and what so many people intuitively realize about fish. And so fishing is not a sport. The fish are not willing participants. They're victims. And even if these fish are caught and released, many of them die ultimately from the injury and trauma that they suffered. They're being impaled. They're being manhandled. They're being held out of the water and partially suffocated and then thrown back in. They may swim away when you put them back in, but it doesn't mean they're going to survive. And they're certainly not helped, and they are harmed by it. It's not a peaceful pastime. It's animal abuse.
Oh, that sounds like such a fun game. Wouldn't you like to be the one at the end of that line?
As they
having a blade or a hook in your mouth. And fish are full of nerve endings, aren't they, where they feel that pain and then being wounded so that you're available as prey for a bigger aquatic being.
Right, right. It's, you know, if people think about what it is, it's animal abuse.
Yeah, animal, non-human animal abuse.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Now, What is Fishville doing to let us know more about all of this?
Well, we recently had our website redesigned by Laura Moretti, who is with Animals Voice. She did a wonderful job redesigning the website. We post information. We're very active on our Facebook account. We have a Twitter account that's very dynamic. We really work essentially to educate the public about fish, that they are admirable, intelligent, sociable, personable beings, and let them know the problems with fishing, which, as you said, harms fish and so many other species and so destructive to the environment. And human slavery is rampant in the fishing industry. The Associated Press this past week won the Pulitzer Prize for its reporting on human slavery in the fishing industry.
Yes.
A lot of that catch is sold here in the U.S. It's largely untraceable, so if you're eating seafood, you may well be eating seafood that was caught by slaves. And we let people know about alternatives to it, that, you know, fish is not a healthful, something healthful to eat, much as the government would like you to believe it is. Again, it's got all kind of toxins and cholesterol, parasites, pathogens. You might be able to kill the parasites by cooking them, but do you want to be eating dead parasites? Hopefully not. Much more health. All the nutrients that we derive from fish can be obtained more healthfully and humanely and environmentally responsible from plant sources, including vegan seafood. There are marvelous vegan seafood versions of pretty much any kind of seafood you can imagine. Mewa, which is a company in New York, they actually sell a vegetarian shark fin. So pretty much any kind of seafood you can imagine, there are marvelous vegan versions. On our website, we list companies that sell different types of vegan seafood. We have hundreds of recipes. People are so imaginative and creative and replicating flavors and textures. You serve it with a little cocktail sauce, a little tartar sauce. If you really like that oceany flavor, just add a little crumbled seaweed, and that's pretty much what you're looking for. You won't be missing out on anything except the toxins and the cruelty and the environmental harm.
Huh. Very good.
It is.
Now, there are people that, I'm sure you've heard this, people that say, I'm a vegan or I'm a vegetarian, I just eat fish.
Yeah.
I call it the scaly vegetable.
Yes.
And just like chicken is the feathered vegetable. We just don't see these beings as sentient.
Right. And people who say that, they just don't understand the definition of vegetarian or vegan. Means not using animal products. There's just no reason to be doing that for your own sake, as well as the animals and the environment. It's just not necessary. You can get these vegan products now in, for example, Target and our local store here. I'm in the D.C. area. Giant, they sell Gardein. You can get it in mainstream supermarkets. Sophie's Kitchen, which is a company that specializes in vegan seafood. Safeway is supposed to start carrying their products now. A lot of health food stores carry these products, Wegmans, Whole Foods. If you look around, you can find them. And again, if you want, you can make your own. We have all the recipes on the website, so many recipes. So, very easy and inexpensive and delicious.
I have a recipe I'm going to share with you later. Maybe you can put it on your website as well. It's my vegan gefilte fish that we have every week, every year during Passover. And it's a good recipe.
Great. Did you come up with it?
I did.
Oh, wonderful. All the better.
And it took some trial and error to get it right, but I'm pretty happy with it now.
Well, I'm glad. Well, please do send it. We'd love to post it.
Now, my first experience, my first moment of enlightenment with fish, I think, I was a vegetarian, and my sister and I went to Epcot Center. This was a long time ago, early 80s. And I saw my first experience with fish farms, where there were these big white tanks filled with fish. And it just struck me, if fish have to be grown this way in order to be eaten, not live in a natural environment and live the way they've been designed to live, I can't participate in that. And I didn't know anything about fish, if they felt anything. It just didn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. It was very intuitive of you, and it is very unnatural. And usually they're kept in very crowded conditions and filthy conditions. The water's pretty much stagnant there with them, filled with feces and decomposing food. They use all kinds of parasiticides and antibiotics and synthetic chemicals and drugs to try to keep the fish alive. If they're in a sea pen where they're penned into a water body, oftentimes the farmed fish are infested with sea lice, parasites, and those transfer into the wild fish. If the fish escape, they can compete with the wild fish. They can interbreed with the wild fish, which causes all kind of genetic problems. There's a situation in Australia right now where they had imported carp for fish farming, and some of these carp escaped and were able to. They're such tenacious animals. They're so able to survive, so adaptable, that they have really thrived there to the point where they're crowding out the other species, and now they're actually planning to infect these carp with a virus and try to kill them. And now their concern isn't about the welfare of the carp, but rather that there will be so many millions of tons of dead carp that it will pollute the water and clog up the waterways. Fish farming is not a solution. It's just another problem.
You said something, and I don't remember exactly what it was at the Vegetarian Pride Parade, something about teaching children to kill
at
an early age.
Probably
kill fish.
Fishing. Probably fishing. You know,
yeah.
they're really trying to promote fishing with the youth now. Let me say one thing, Karen, before we get away from fish farming. I just want to mention the reason why there's so many fish killed for food in the U.S. is because so many wild-caught fish are caught to feed the farm fish, because so many of these farm fish are naturally carnivorous fish. So they are catching, they're basically wiping out the oceans to feed these farmed fish, and to the point where they're running out of farmed fish to feed, of wild-caught fish to feed them. So now they're trying to turn these naturally carnivorous fish vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, we have animals out in the wild. Wildlife, sea lions are starving off the coast of California. Marine birds are being found dead for lack of food. Other animals are being shot and killed because they are eating fish that people want to consume. So, you know, it's just causing such havoc in nature. It's just, you know, again, it's not a solution. It's just another set, whole other set of problems. But children, I'm trying to imagine what that was about. And it's probably the way fishing is being promoted to the youth, because it is kind of a boring pastime, really, if you think about it. And kids really aren't that interested in fishing. So now they're doing all kind of youth promotion programs to try to get kids out there to kill fish. It's promoting animal abuse.
Yeah. There's something ingrained in our culture, and we learn early on, through fishing or other means, that killing is okay.
It desensitizes children to animal suffering and makes them think of animals as disposable commodities to do with as you please.
Now, what about extinction? We're seeing a lot of extinction of different species of fish in the oceans.
Yes. Well, there was a study out not too long ago. It was done by World Wildlife Fund in conjunction with the Zoological Society of London, and they've estimated that in the past 40 years, aquatic populations have been halved because of overfishing, largely, and pollution, and now we have climate change and ocean acidification. There's so many problems affecting the oceans and waterways now that these animals, these species, are having a hard enough time surviving without people needlessly eating them.
Now, I have to mention, because everything is connected, that one of the major causes of climate change is animal agriculture, where we're growing monocropping plants to feed animals, to feed people. It's very energy intensive. It's destructive on the environment. These land animals are putting out a lot of methane gas. Their excrement puts out a lot of methane gas and nitrous oxide, and this is devastating. And so it's this domino effect. And we're affecting climate change. The waters are warming. These fish, the ones that are left that we haven't sucked out of the ocean with trawlers and all kinds of crazy methods to get as many as we can. And we don't even eat. Let's talk about that in a minute. But we're taking them out of the ocean, but we're also making it more uninhabitable for them. And I've read these heartbreaking stories about the coral reefs, how they are being destroyed in various areas, and we need them. The fish need them. It's just a disaster.
It really is, and so much of the crops grown for are used as animal feed, and that manure, their manure is used for fertilizer and synthetic fertilizers, and that washes into the waterways and creates these dead zones, just destroys the oxygen, takes away the oxygen, and nothing can live there. I mean, huge dead zones in the oceans where nothing can live. So it really is all connected, and it really is just causing environmental havoc.
Okay, let's talk about one last thing, GMO salmon. What do you think about that?
I think it's terrible. Yes, they are trying to. There's a company called Aqua Advantage, and they are trying to genetically modify, or they have genetically modified salmon by inserting genes from different species, different fishes into them to make them grow more quickly. They're trying to get it approved. It would be the first animal food approved for human consumption. It hasn't been approved yet, and hopefully it won't, but, you know, it's looking like it will be. And then the fight will be whether or not they'll have to label it as being genetically modified. But, you know, no one needs it. No one's clamoring for it except the people who would profit from it. It's shown to cause deformities in these fish. There's concerns also about these fish. If they were to escape, what environmental effect that could have. You know, it's just, again, it's cruel, it's inhumane, it's unnecessary, and it's just to make money. That's all it's about.
I remember reading in one of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, it was on fish, and it had nothing to do with whether we should eat fish or not. They were just stories about fish. And several of the stories were so heartwarming about the engagement people had with individual fish, demonstrating that these fish were aware of the interaction and they responded in a very positive way. There was one story about how this one, I think she was a doctor diver of some sort, and she repaired a wound on one of the fish who was in need. And it was just a beautiful story.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. You know, I have a page on our website called Your Page where people can post stories of how they came to realize that fish are sentient, or experiences that they've had with fish. And we invite anyone who'd like to submit their account to do so. You can send it to info@fishfield.org. Also, if I could ask, we were talking about how things are interconnected. We have a campaign right now in the Chesapeake Bay. These beautiful cow-nose rays, they come up from the Gulf of Mexico every year to mate and give birth to their pups. They don't mate until late in life, and they only have one pup a year, so their population is very prone to predation. They've been being scapegoated for decreases in the oyster populations here, which, as science has shown, is actually due to pollution and disease largely brought on by the pollution and overcollection of oysters for human consumption. So they've been holding these bow fishing contests where they go out and in boats, and they can ride right up on the rays who are gliding on the surface of the water and shoot them with these bows and impale them and haul them out of the water, and they just beat them mercilessly. We documented it with shark last year. And then throw them in a pile to suffocate, and then throw them back and dead and dying into the water afterwards. So we're really trying to get that stopped. We have a petition on our website. If people would sign that, we'd really appreciate it. And we really have a full-out campaign now to try to get these horrific bow fishing contests stopped.
What will we think of next?
I worry to wonder.
Huh. You know, I forgot to mention today, it's something that I've started again recently on this program, that I do take callers during the program. So the number is 1-888-874-4888. You know that number, 1-874-4... Oh, I just forgot what I just said. Anyway, 1-888-874-4888. There's so many eights. If you have a question for Mary or myself in the next few minutes while she's still with us, feel free to call in, and I will be keeping the line open for the rest of the program. I want to know, you mentioned people post stories on your website. Can you tell me what you've learned from fish, maybe from these stories or your own experience?
Yeah, you know, when I started this, I really wasn't that familiar with fish, but the more I learn about them, just the more admirable they are. They really are just amazing, wonderful creatures. They're perceptive. They can learn things. People have taught them skills. There was this case where they were teaching these fish to come to the sound of a bell. They were feeding them by the sound of the bell, and then they released these fish into the wild. And months later, they rang the bell, and the fish came back because they still recognize that sound as being for food. You know, they learn from each other. They pass knowledge from generation to generation, which is the basis of culture. They can recognize other fish by very subtle facial markings. They know social rank by observing how the other fish interact. They're very sociable. Well, you know, depending on the species, there's so many different, over 30,000 different species of fish, but basically, some of them are very attentive parents. They work cooperatively, including with other species. For example, there are large fish called groupers, and they're reef fish, but they're such large fish that they can't necessarily get into some of these reef crevices. So they will go in search of an eel, and they make a gesture to the eel that indicates that they want to hunt together. And if the eel accepts the invitation, they'll follow the grouper back to the reef, and the eel can get inside the reef and chase out whoever they're after. And either the eel catches them, or if they get out, the grouper may catch them. But it's been shown that by working together, they're 5 times more successful than working alone. So interspecies interaction, fish use tools. We have videotape of fish taking a clam and swimming a considerable distance with them and using a rock to break the clam open, which, you know, when you think of these fish not having hands or appendages like we have, it's kind of difficult to use tools, but they've shown that they actually do that, which is considered a very sophisticated behavior by scientists. You know, fish have personalities. There's shy fish. There's bold fish. They form friendships, including with human companions, or if there's fish in ponds who get to know dogs who come to visit every day, and they'll come up just to visit with the dogs. People who have fish, they say that, you know, if they walk in the room, the fish recognize them as opposed to other people. So, you know, they recognize and differentiate people. And most importantly, they're sentient. Science has shown that they do feel fear and pain. They have nerves and the central nervous system. They have pain receptors. They create pain killers. They react to pain the way you would expect an animal in pain to react. They respond to pain killers the way you would expect an animal whose pain has been alleviated to respond. And they quickly learn to avoid painful situations. So the evidence is in. For anyone who's doubting it, fish are sentient. And you can plainly see that when they're being harmed, they're in distress. And it's that alone is reason not to harm them. There's just no good reason to be harming these wonderful animals.
Do you have any favorite recipes on your site that you might let us know about?
Well, we usually hand out, we do a lot of events. We just did the Baltimore Veg Fest, and before that we did the Frederick Veg Out, and, you know, pretty much almost all summer long there are so many wonderful vegan events and conferences to go to. And we do hand out a vegan tuna recipe because it's so simple and so easy. And tuna is the most commonly consumed fish. It's just a very simple recipe made out of, you can make it out of tofu or you can make it out of mashed chickpeas. Very easy. And people just seem to really love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on our website, we have many, many different tuna recipes, tuna fish, tuna salad, all kinds of fish fillets, crab, cakes. Like I said, pretty much you name it, there are vegan versions of it.
You know, I don't talk about fish enough, and my head just keeps popping up with questions. Do you also include the mammals, the ocean mammals, in your program in terms of education, like the dolphins and the whales?
Not so much. Mainly the main way we do that is just to let people know that, you know, fishing is really the way that they are being harmed the most. That's the way most hundreds of thousands of whales and dolphins, seals are killed every year because of fishing. But, you know, there are so many organizations devoted to marine mammals and so many people who are concerned about marine mammals, and often to the exclusion of fish. As for example, people are concerned about animals being kept in aquariums and that, and usually they're focusing on marine mammals, but fish also are kept that way, and they too suffer from being kept in captivity. So we don't focus too much on marine mammals. We do try to point out also that shrimp and crabs and lobsters, the shellfish, they're the second largest category of animals used for food. And, you know, there is also compelling evidence that many of them are sentient and suffer and are caught and killed in horrible ways. There are no laws protecting the way these animals who are used for food are treated.
Oh, thank you so much, Mary, for doing what you're doing. We need you. The fish need you. And I'm surprised that it's taken this long to have an organization that represents them in this way. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Karen. And one of the things we try to get is to urge people to urge other animal organizations to increase their advocacy for fish, because they are the ignored victims. They truly are.
Yes.
So thank you for helping us spread the word.
Well, I saw your earlier version of your website, and I just today saw the newer version. It's really lovely, and I look forward to visiting.
Well, thank you. It's a work in progress. I guess it always will be, but
yes.
I hope everyone will visit, and Facebook page and Twitter. We really like to get the word out. So thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me, Mary Finelli of Fishville on It's All About Food. Be well.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay. Can we take a little break, please? I need a moment to have a sip. And please, I know you're burning with questions, so call in at 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me at info@realmeals.org, and we'll talk. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me in this second part of today's program. As I mentioned earlier, I am actively involved in the Food Revolution Summit, and I'm wondering if you've been tuning in and listening and what you think. Now, the Food Revolution Summit is hosted by John and Ocean Robbins of the Food Revolution Network, and I feel very privileged to be able to work with them from time to time. The Food Revolution Summit is very inspiring, very galvanizing, because there are so many people that are interested and so many people who are listening at the same time all over the world. And you can feel that energy. You can feel that desire to want to know more, to understand what's going on, and to figure out how to improve our food system. And like I said earlier, these events, whether they're small and in your neighborhood, or they're bigger in your area, or online, they are so necessary and inspiring. You know that you're not alone. You know that there are people that are working towards making the food system better for our health, for the environment. And I find I'm always re-energized and inspired. I'm also exhausted. I have to admit that, because spending 3+ hours focusing on listening to these speakers and fielding questions, and then getting back to what I do every day, it's complicated. I'm not complaining. I love it. And I hope you're participating. And there's something about getting this information in a concentrated dose. I appreciate all of you who listen on a weekly basis to this program, and I've had many of the speakers who are being interviewed at the Food Revolution Summit, they've been on this program. Something about being a part, like I said, with so many other people, and you can feel that energy, and there's power in that energy. You really feel like you can change the world. And hearing all of this information at once, I think it helps, in some way, at least for me, to connect the dots even better, to see how everything is connected. As we were talking before about the oceans and the fish, the fact that we feed fish to land animals, and the land animals have been creating all of this havoc, increasing greenhouse gas emissions and putting out all kinds of toxic components into the water and the air, polluting our environment. It's all connected. And it's like a vicious cycle. And then you can connect some of the good discoveries about health and the powerful plant foods that really can nourish us, and the foods that have potent anti-cancer properties. I'm always learning new things. And that's really exciting. That's really encouraging. One of the things that I found interesting. There are a lot of people ask questions when they are participating in this event, and I try to answer the ones that come in on the Food Summit, Food Revolution Summit Facebook page. And there have been a bunch of questions that I see repetitively. A lot of people are asking very similar things. So one of the things is, not all of these speakers at the summit are promoting the same diet. Some of the speakers are promoting a vegan diet. Some of the speakers are promoting a primarily plant-based diet. But I want to say whether the speakers are promoting like a paleo diet or a vegan diet or something in between, there's actually a lot that all of them have in common. And that's one of the points that I make to the people posing questions and that I want to make to you. I brought this up from time to time. The people that are out there promoting a healthy diet, I think for the most part, there are a handful out there that are promoting something completely different. But most of the experts today are promoting a plant-based diet. Now, they may say it's okay to eat meat and butter and milk, but other than people supporting the Weston Price Foundation, and I don't think they're a credible organization, even the paleo people, they're telling us to avoid refined processed foods. That's good. Many of them are saying to avoid dairy products. That's good. They're promoting organic foods, not grown with pesticides and herbicides. That's good. They're promoting non-GMO foods. So we can form a bridge, all of us, and we can align on the things that we all agree upon. Now, if you're looking for the ideal diet for you because you want to jump in and do what's best for you, then it can be a little confusing because you listen to one person. I mean, even the doctors that are promoting a vegan diet, you hear some discrepancies or you hear some differences. There's this ongoing debate about fats are even, and it's the clean fats, raw nuts and seeds. Are they okay? Are they not okay? And some doctors will say you want to not have them at all, especially if you're having some sort of cardiovascular disease crisis. And then others will tell you they're essential because they offer minerals and great nutrition. You have to decide what's best for yourself and what feels best for you. Don't put down your intuition. I think tuning into intuition can be a very valuable thing. I like to tell people that you know best. You know what works for your body best because you're in your body. And your body can also tell you what's best if you take the time to quiet your thoughts and listen. Yeah, so basically, it's not that confusing. Most experts today are telling us to eat plant foods. And then it's up to you to decide how much further you want to go. Now, you know, I'm a vegan. There's no question about it. I am an out vegan, and I am a vegan because ever since I was a teenager, I didn't believe in killing animals. Pain and suffering is a no-no for me, and I don't want to be a part of that exploitation. So that's where I'm coming from. But a lot of these experts in the Food Revolution Summit, for example, are health experts. There are some other speakers that'll be coming later on in the program who have a slightly different focus, and it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say. But me, it's sentient beings first. I don't want to contribute to exploitation or harm. And then, of course, there's this wonderful bonus when I discovered that plant foods are healthy, health promoting, fight cancer, and reduce our risk of chronic disease. And hello, plant foods are delicious. And if you haven't figured that out yet, I hope you're checking out our recipes at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Some other questions that people have been asking during the summit that I see a lot of, when some of the medical doctors who've been talking in the summit have been talking about dairy, all of them have been saying that dairy is not healthful for many different reasons. And people get confused because a lot of people believe that yogurt is a healthy food. Yogurt has probiotics. Yogurt has a lot of romance to it, with stories of people making yogurt for generations up in the hills with the goats. I have images of Heidi and her grandfather breathing fresh air and people making yogurt. I don't know what kind of images come up for you when you hear about yogurt. But probiotics are important. And do we need yogurt to get those probiotics? And my opinion is, not really. I don't think we need to consume dairy in any form. And fortunately today, if you like yogurt and you feel like yogurt's a good thing to have, you can have it with non-dairy milks. They're offered in supermarkets and you can make them yourself. I believe we have a recipe on how to make yogurt at the responsibleeatingandliving.com website. And I've made it with soy milk. I've made it with almond milk. And it tastes like yogurt. And the other thing about yogurt, most of the varieties today, they're in the store, most of them have too much sugar. And if you're going to eat yogurt because you want something healthful, you want to read the label and make sure there's no sugar in it. There's been a lot of discussion during this summit about sugar. And, well, you know, sugar is not a healthy food. And I'm not talking about sugar that's in fruit, because fruit, whole fruit, is a healthy food. It's just when we process it and make it a white powder, like Dr. Susan Pierce Thompson says, it's as addicting as cocaine. White powder of cocaine, think of white powder sugar, think of addiction and poison. Now, I have to admit, I'm not perfect. Surprise! I do like a sweet treat from now and then, every now and then, and I will use evaporated cane juice from time to time, which is sugar. I'm not fooling myself, but it's not every day, and it's not very often. I use evaporated cane juice because it is a vegan version of sugar. It is not as processed as white sugar, and for some reason in the United States, we use charred animal bones in the filtration process in making white sugar. Not quite sure that's necessary, because I remember talking to someone from Australia and they don't do it down under to make their conventional sugar. So the question is, do we need to take probiotics if we're not consuming yogurt, or even if we are consuming yogurt, do we need to take probiotics? And you may remember in my interview with Dr. Furman recently, he said that if we're eating a nutrient-dense, plant-rich diet, if we're eating a really healthy, top-notch diet, our gut flora should be fine, and we shouldn't need probiotics. And the beans and other foods are prebiotics that feed the probiotics. And it's a beautiful synthesis and harmony. Everything works together and keeps your gut flora in balance and happy. Now, if you're not on the healthiest diet, well, then you might need probiotics to get things going and put things in balance. And you can find probiotics in health food stores and vitamin stores. You can also eat fermented foods. I like miso and tempeh. but dairy yogurt, not necessary, because they come with more problems than benefits. And today, the yogurt in the stores today is not even that yogurt that I'm thinking of, made by the grandfathers and grandmothers far away off into the mountains. The yogurts today, in addition to sugar, they have added fat and cream. They're made richer, so that people like them better, so that they taste more rich and yummy. So you're getting a handful of probiotics, but you're also getting a lot of crap. Watch out. And these in addition to the environmental devastation that we get from raising cows, raising goats even, to make milk for yogurt, it's the environmental devastation affecting our water and our soil, growing the plants with pesticides and herbicides to feed these animals. It's all bad. And remember, in order to make milk, you have to exploit. You have to artificially inseminate the female. And that's rape in my book. If you ever look online and see how they do it, you can Google it. It's extremely pornographic, and yet universities promote this kind of process. It's incredible. And we do all kinds of crazy things in order to get milk, in order to make dairy. But it's the Greek yogurt. That's what I'm thinking of. Some of the Greek yogurt brands, they're an environmental disaster because there's this, I think it's called acid whey. It's a waste product, and they don't know what to do with it. So all these little things connected to something that you think romantically or culturally is a health food. And that's what we talk about on It's All About Food. All right, last thing. I keep saying last. Maybe it's not the last, but we have about 5 minutes left. Let's see what I can cover. Big popular item, and a lot of questions about it in the Food Revolution Summit, has been about bone broth. Bone broth. Bone broth is very popular in the paleo world. Paleo. Can you say paleo? In the paleo world. And many people think it's therapeutic, it's nutritious, it's necessary, it's important. One of the things that I like to do is give some really good references so people know, can look themselves and make their own decisions. And in talking about bone broth, I go to Dr. Greger at his website, nutritionfacts.org. He has a post and a video on lead contamination in bone broth. And this is an interesting thing where we're going to connect fish with bone broth and the contamination as a result. Okay, so we were talking earlier about fish. And there's a lot of fish byproducts that are fed to farmed animals, like farmed fish. And some of these fish bioaccumulate heavy metals and pass them on to the farmed animals when they're fed to farmed animals. And then they pass it on to us. And they're very high in lead. And you may know that lead is really a disaster. We're hearing about the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. It is really devastating. Well, there's a lot of lead in fish that also goes into animals. And it accumulates in the animal's bones. Yeah. So when you're making a bone broth, you're making a lead broth. And the study that he refers to was actually done on organic free-range chickens. So if you think you're doing something more healthful by choosing non-human animals to eat that have been raised with grass-fed and organically, here's an example of where it's not a very healthful thing to do. Okay, I said the last. I'm going to talk about one more thing. Another question that comes up very often, and it's coming up in the summit, when people are encouraged to eat high-fiber foods and greens in particular, and I talk about that all the time. You know, I swear by greens, green juice, green smoothies, green foods, steamed, and raw. There are people that have Crohn's disease, people that have irritable bowel syndrome, and ulcerative colitis, and very often, the doctors, the medical establishment, will not recommend high-fiber foods because the digestive system is so inflamed when people have these particular conditions. But we need to eat those foods in order to strengthen our immune system. So people get really confused and don't know what they're supposed to do. And here's what I recommend. So if you know anybody with Crohn's disease or irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, or ulcerative colitis that needs help, I recommend to Google Dr. Furman's position paper on Crohn's disease. And he gives a very specific way to heal, where you start with cooked vegetables and slowly introduce more high fiber foods and more raw foods as you can tolerate them. And that is really valuable information. Okay, I think I got to everything I wanted to talk about today. Thank you for joining me. And please, as always, visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live, where we're continually adding some fun recipes and videos. I hope you enjoy it. You can find me at info@realmeals.org. And remember, have a delicious week.